listening to Sci-Fi TV Rewatch, episode 555. My name's Dave, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Wayne as we near the end of our journey with the Netflix speculative series Black Mirror. And dude, I have to apologize for being late. I had to update our backup software, and the terms of agreement were like... So it took me fucking an hour to read through all that. So
really, so you read through all the terms of agreement?
Nah, I just hit accept. Anyway, so
we are recording really late.
I know. We are recording on April 1st, and you know, we had talked last week, oh, we should come up with something good for April Fool's Day, and then I realized, yeah, but it's not going to publish until like April 4th or 5th on Friday, so by then it's like, you know, whatever. But anyway, so you had practice today. That's always fun in this kind of weather.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Practice? We had it later. It was like at 1 o'clock, so.
Oh, so it stopped raining.
By the time we had it, it wasn't raining really, yeah. So we only... out of the, 18 kids the team, only 8 were there, though, so.
Oh, okay. So did you go down and tear up the softball field, outfield?
No, we're on the turf.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. In case anybody's wondering, back when I was coaching, Wayne was coaching lacrosse, I was coaching softball, the fields were more or less right next to each other, and the head coach of the varsity, I used to jokingly refer to him Attila the Hun and the Thundering Herd, because after you guys would tear up your field, you'd move down to the softball second field and tear up the outfield there. Yeah. And you know, I'm not going to say his name, but he's a good dude. And you know, he was easy to, it's like, dude, come on. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, but,
I'd also say that was not always the most fun for me trying to coach a team. Basically, we were either on the track and fields, javelin and shot put field, or the outfield for the softball team. You know, but actually, now that we have the turf field, then that opens everything up because the
right
and everything. So all of those issues that are a thing of the past. You know.
The muddy days are over.
Well, there's still loads of, because I mean, I'm helping out the JV team, so we rarely get the turf. So it's plenty of mud, but just we got our own field that we don't have to compete with other teams and piss off other coaches when we're on the field. So,
well, let's go ahead and get to what we're watching. And
they called me Attila the Hun?
No, not you. Oh. The head coach of the varsity.
Okay.
Since he was the one calling the shots at that point, you know. anyway, I am in a full-on film mode, so it seems.
Wow.
Now, I am not a fan of the horror genre, certainly not a fan of the slasher genre, but our friend Scott recommended, sort of offhand, I guess, a film titled X, which is on Netflix at the moment, and it had all, you know, the three main components that we like in our visual entertainment. Okay. So I gave it a shot. And, you know, it stars Mia Goth, who, again, I've heard the name, don't really know her, Brittany Snow, and Jenny Ortega. So they're the three females in the film. And here's the basic premise. It's 1979, and six people, three women, three men, load up the van, and they head to this old farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere to make a pornographic movie, because the producer, you know, he sees the future as pornography in home video, and he wants to get in on the cutting edge. So that's why they're there.
Okay.
And there's an older couple who owns, you know, the farm, and we see them, and I'll just leave it at that. Now, it is a slasher film, so again, mm-hmm. if you're a horror fan, and what I since found out, it's considered a relatively important film, and that the critics are pretty much in agreement that, you know, they see this in a positive light, so... Okay, then I found out, well, there's a second film, and it's more or less a prequel that takes place in 1918 and centers around the old woman now as a, you know, I guess she's supposed to be 18, and we follow her in this film. So it's the same, you know, it's one of the same actresses, Mia Goth, from the first film, you know, plays this woman in a movie called Pearl. And there is going to be a third film that's going to be released, I believe, in July. So if you're into the slasher genre, horror genre, the second one, Pearl's fairly light on the horror elements, but whatever. And then
I'm not necessarily a big fan of the slasher, but you did say porn, so you know, maybe I'll check it out.
So now I did finally see Terminator Dark Fate, the 2019 sci-fi action film starring Mackenzie Davis, Linda Hamilton, Arnold, Natalia Reyes, Gabriel Luna also as the bad machine. It was really good. I really liked it.
Yeah, right? It was a good movie. Yeah, but it just kind of got crapped on at the time, and I don't think a lot of people went to see it.
I noticed IMDb rating for Genesis is higher than this one, which, I haven't seen Genesis, so I can't speak.
It is awful. I mean, I love the Terminator movies.
And then I'm working my way through Three Body Problem, that just, which I'm enjoying, but I'm taking my time. So, all right, what do you got?
You're still not done Three Body Problem?
No, I've watched the first four. My wife seemed interested. We've been married long enough that I know she's really not. So I've been watching it when she's asleep or whatever, which, I don't have a whole lot of
little free body on the side.
Huh. Yeah. So, anyway, what do you got?
Well, I finished watching Three Body Problem, but I guess I don't really want to talk about that. I'll wait till you're done. We can discuss how we liked it.
Well, I read the book, but obviously this may be different. Oh, I did finish Agency, the second book in the Peripheral trilogy.
Okay,
talk about that some other time.
Is that pretty good? But, I remember you said you were enjoying it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I understood it a lot better than Peripheral.
Right.
Like as we said, if we hadn't seen Peripheral, I'm not sure I would have totally understood what was going on in the book.
Totes, as the kids say.
Yep.
So Three Body Problem, which we're not talking about now. Constellation had its finale on this past Wednesday. And, I give it a solid meh. I think the second to last episode I thought was really good, kind of focused in on the lady's daughter, and I thought it was a really, really good one. But other than that, I can't say that I've really looked forward to watching Constellation. It was decent. I mean, obviously, a lot of the production values were top-notch. I thought it was very well written. The acting was good, directing, all that, the mise-en-scène, all those parts of it, But overall, I think, this is just mostly just me. It just seemed like it was just going so slowly at times, And then there's characters in here who are just downright unlikable, which is, that's not a problem, but, I don't know. I mean, they definitely have, it seems like they've set up for a season two. I don't know if they have because, there's definitely a level of resolution at the end of the last episode, but then there is a final scene that kind of resets everything. Not resets, I shouldn't say, but it adds a major wrinkle that needs to be addressed. Of course, if the show got canceled and never made another episode, then probably most people would say, okay, we have resolution at the end by and large, and so fine, it told a story. But there really is a lot more they can handle there. So and I feel like probably the next season would be a lot better. I think basically what many series do, but series don't necessarily have the time and space to do, which is really use that first season as exposition, right? Which I think this is what we said about Outer Range, right? That I feel like probably the next season of Out of Range will probably be a lot better, because I think they just spent the whole first season setting everything up. And I think that was with Constellation too. But so it was okay.
Like, now, did you ever finish The Good Place?
I'm like halfway through season three. I'm like halfway through season three now. So
okay, so you've seen the paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So is it that big of a paradigm shift in Constellation, or just like a big kind of plot?
It's like, it's just something I can't really, I mean, yes. Yeah, I'll say yes, it is. It's something. Well, okay. All right. No, actually, because in The Good Place, it basically takes everything that has happened and just turns it completely upside down, right? Whereas this is just something that, oh, well, we assumed this one thing this whole time. All of a sudden, like, oh, that thing we assumed might not be true, but it's still what we've come to understand is the nature of the universe in the show still remains the same, maybe. okay. Yeah, you know, but thank you for bringing up The Good, and thank you, Dave, for talking about The Good Place so many times that I finally watched it. I absolutely love that show. That show is so freaking funny and clever and well written, and the acting and everyone, and it's just, oh my God, like, why did I not watch this when you kept telling me about it back when you were watching it as it was actually on, you know?
I know, Cheedy. I mean, I love him. Oh,
he's great. He's great. So it's just such an enjoyable show, such a very, very clever, well-written show. And the core characters are all, you know, ones you can easily root for as you want in a sitcom, obviously. But yeah, it's fabulous. Love the Good Life big time.
Blake Bortles. Anyway,
all the shots that people in Florida, like the one guy's like, yeah, they're at a bank and she wants to like give all her money to him. And he's like, you know, normally we don't even let people from Florida in here.
All right, well, let's get to Black Mirror, Season 6, Episode 1, Joan is Awful, written by Charlie Brooker, directed by Ali Pankhiu. This season was released June 15th, 2023. You know, I really like this one. Clearly a black comedy. And in terms of the ideas that we're expected to look at, you know, there's a lot buried within the storyline. You know, is the ending confusing? Yeah, it's confusing. And Alan addresses that a little bit in his feedback. And I love Charlie Brooker, the showrunner and the writer of most of the episodes, just like, stop asking questions, just deal with it. It's like, right. Yeah, because that's kind of what we have to do. And, you know, I've gone on record many times, you know, going crazy when showrunners feel the need to explain what the viewers saw. It should speak for itself. So I like the fact that he told a couple of the actors in the show when they approached him about it. It's like, we don't understand. Too bad. But I guess for me, you know, maybe one of the core elements is the suggestion that we reevaluate our life choices. And I've never been somebody who lives in regret, you know, growing up and you know, through adulthood, you make a decision. It's not always the best one, but if it turns out bad, you move on. You do the best you can to recover and go from there. So I don't think it's asking people to necessarily regret their life choices, but certainly think about them and you know, maybe make some adjustments moving forward.
Well, it's so funny because what Joan, and of course we don't actually meet Joan until the very end of the episode. And what we see is just really a vicarious. We're watching the Annie Murphy version of this Lee Joan's life, but what she gets there, which maybe not everyone would necessarily appreciate, but what actually Joan must appreciate is the ability to see herself objectively, to really right. look objectively at her life and realize that, you know, like, I don't want to do this corporate job. I actually want to run I want to be a barista. I want to own a coffee shop, you know? And not everyone gets that opportunity to really be able to evaluate their own lives by seeing it as other people, you know, by seeing yourself as other people see you.
Right. And not that she's going to end up with Mac or even somebody like Mac, but I think it becomes clear to her that she's not happy in her relationship with Krish. And while we don't necessarily see what happens with that at the end, I think we can extrapolate enough that they probably broke up. I would certainly think, but you never know. I mean,
if she got to the Himesh Patel version of Krish, maybe she would have stuck with him a little bit more.
That's, well,
that's a good looking guy right there.
Yeah, it is. It is. Now, I kind of was joking at the beginning of the discussion about the terms of agreement for the software. So, you know, is this a stark warning against signing documents without reading them? I think yes and no, mostly no, because so many of these things are just so convoluted and so long. I mean, I just got one from, wasn't Xfinity, it must have been AT&T, I don't remember, somebody that I have an account with, and like most people, I've got like probably dozens of these different kinds of accounts, so
yeah.
Who's got the time? You just hit fine.
You just trust that there's nothing ludicrous in there, you know, like it's just normal. Okay, you're going to take it. I understand you're taking advantage of me to some extent, but as long as it's you're not taking my kids from me or anything like that, or you're going to defray $100 from every paycheck, I think we're good and we can move on. I can get my kids signed up for the field hockey tournament here, you know, or something like that.
Right. And I love the fact that Netflix was cool with what Charlie Brooker does in this episode, because clearly from the, you know, the very first title slide when it says Joan is awful, it's like, oh, well, that's the Netflix logo and just with the different title and the sound effects and uh-huh. everything. And on the other hand, I think one of the, I don't want to say more important ideas, but this whole idea that there's a computer that creates a multiverse and okay, that we're living in a matrix like environment. Well, okay. So probably, I don't want to say most Dark Mirror viewers, but like many Dark Mirror viewers have seen The Matrix and probably the other films in the Matrix series. So you got some idea of what might be going on here. But, you know, you go back to the writer's strike and what the writers are right. afraid of in terms of AI intervention. And you understand that, well, what they're proposing here isn't that far-fetched, that artificial intelligence via the computer software can put together, you know, a right. pilot script for a TV show or a movie. And, you know, that's kind of scary, even for somebody that's not a television writer.
You know, I still think, like, when they, you know, like the Star Wars movies bringing Carrie Fisher in after she passed away, or Peter Cushing and stuff like that, you know, there, it's just the technology isn't quite there where we just accept it. Like, you know, as you're watching, like, okay, that doesn't look, or when they de-age people, Mark Hamill in The Mandalorian or Samuel L. Jackson in Captain Marvel, you know, it doesn't look quite right. You know, it doesn't look quite like a regular person. So they're not there yet, but they're close enough that you figure they're going to get there pretty soon, where they can make a show like this that is completely CGI, and it doesn't look like it at all. It looks like, you know, they used live actors for it, and that's probably not far away. So yeah, so you're like watching this, and I did really think about, even though I was probably fairly annoyed, like a lot of people during the strike, I get what they were fighting for, and it, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly the power and intrusion of AI in other aspects of life, you know, is you know frightening in its own right. But even the ability to write the scripts, you know, all of the CGI stuff aside, you know, and then there's always been a derivative nature in the entertainment industry, whether it's film, television, music. And I think it would only get worse, you know, if we go down the route that, that we see here. Now, I say it would get worse. I guess there's a lot of people out there that like the same old stuff over and over and over again. And,
yeah, true.
You know, I mean, I've mentioned many times, my wife and I watch a ton of international crime dramas. And, you know, when you see enough of them, you know, it's really great. We're you know, finding ones that have fresh story ideas, but the one that seems to crop up in many of them is that eventually, if the show has enough seasons, you know, 3-4 maybe, you know, the detective or, you know, the good guy's going to get accused of some crime, and then he or she's going to have to prove his or her innocence, and that's kind of where we were with the show we were just watching.
Right.
But fortunately, they didn't drag it out too long, so that was cool. But obviously, this whole thing with the computer creating multiverses, you know, when we get to the end, is where our I don't want to say our heads start to explode, because, you know, we kind of get what they're talking about here with
yeah.
Source Joan and
well, because each version of the show needs a version below it, right?
Exactly.
Because that's right. The whole thing that drives the show is that Joan is seeing her. So every version needs a version below it, which is really would go on ad infinitum. But luckily, they have something with the word quantum in front of it. Exactly. Even the lady says, it's just magic, right?
Right, right. And that's kind of, I guess, Charlie Brooker's answer. I believe it was, I had read, it was Annie Murphy that was asking about it, and Selma Hayek, and he basically, he didn't use that phrase, but that's basically, hey, it's magic, just let it go. And I guess it's Michael Cera who's trying to explain it until Selma Hayek just slugs him to shut him up. He's annoying or whatever, which, you know, that again was a great, great scene.
I like Michael Cera a lot, but there's probably a lot of people out there who found that scene very satisfying.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, and then what level of privacy can we reasonably expect if we live in an online world?
Well, you should just stop with what level of privacy can we reasonably expect?
And period. The answer would be none.
Or question mark, right? In today's day and world, like in today's day and age, I mean, even the lawyer said, you know, if you have your phone with you everywhere, right? What do you think it's doing when you, and stuff like that? I mean, that's all that stuff is not necessarily fiction,
you know? Right, right.
We've talked about this, how much do we willingly, you know, put out there about ourselves?
Right. Right. And as you mentioned that it's brought to Annie's attention about, you know, you got your phone with you. What do you think your phone's doing? Well, just like you said. So, you know, the whole idea of, well, are there cameras in my home? I mean, how did they know that Chris and I were going to turn on Streamberry? And so, you know, that's never necessarily answered. But so, the opening scene where we see Joan, played by Annie Murphy, who is in Schitt's Creek, which I think is a show you saw. We started and watched a few episodes. You know, it was good. It just wasn't really our thing. So never really went past about 3 or 4 episodes.
I like Schitt's Creek a lot. And Annie Murphy is great. She is so freaking funny. It's unbelievable. I mean, this role here is a far cry from her Schitt's Creek role, but she's just hilarious. And she was great in this episode
too. Oh, yeah, no question. The acting, again, and the acting has been, you know, across the board really good in Black Mirror, no matter, you know, who they had in the episode. But we see her, she wakes up. Does everybody use their smartphone for their alarm clock? I mean, I don't, but not that I need an alarm clock very often. But
I do some when I'm not at home. I have an alarm clock next to my bed, but when I'm on the road, I have it set. And I actually have Panic at the Disco radio is my alarm, which definitely alarmed my daughter last weekend when we were up in Fairfield. And the alarm went off playing a Panic at the Disco song. She was like, what the hell is going on?
Good for her. All right. So anyway, so Joan gets up, gets ready for work. Nice breakfast prepared by her fiance, Krish, played by Avi Nash, who we know from Silo, which was I really enjoyed that show. He's also in The Walking Dead, which I know you watched. But now, did you recognize him from that?
No, I didn't. But I haven't watched The Walking Dead in a long time. And that's, I don't know. I should go back and finish it out, but, you know, whatever.
But so on her ride to work, she's listening to this really sexually suggestive rap music, gets a text from another lover who's in town, and then proceeds to fire an employee. So that's kind of our introduction to Joan. And
well, what we see from her is she's like, seems like a pretty normal person, right?
Yeah, like I mean,
she's very relatable.
Yeah. I mean, look, as you know, I'm no prude. I'm very far from it. But her musical choice for the ride into work, is, I think, for me, the first hint that, all right, I'm going to reevaluate what I think of this character. Her firing the employee, I get that. It's not her call. It comes from upstairs or whatever. So, you know, I get that. And I thought she was fine in her interaction with the employee that she's forced to fire. And, you know, her male secretary seems to have a good relationship with her, has her back as much as he can. But, you know, I kind of like the way they set this up. She goes to her therapist, and that's where we're really introduced to the fact that she's really just kind of sleepwalking through her life. Mm-hmm. And for her, you know, being able to say it out loud to her therapist, you would think would be a really good thing. So, you know, I found that scene pretty revealing. Rob Delaney, do you know him? That's Mac.
Yeah. There was,
we saw him in a show called Catastrophe, which I think is on Apple. I think that's where we saw it, where he has a one night stand with a woman and she gets pregnant and they end up getting married. And it's a comedy, but
right.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good, I must say. But that's where I know him from.
Okay. He looked familiar. I did briefly look him up on IMDb. I don't know if I really – there was something I – like a show that I'd seen that he'd been in, but I didn't really pursue it. Okay.
So why does she go to meet him at his hotel?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you just said, I mean, Joan is – her life is
awful.
Steady, but yeah, I don't think she's awful per se, because she's a pretty regular person, but she's just like, you know, not really happy with where she is in life. And even though Krish, it seems like a very nice guy, but she's not really that into him, right? But she doesn't want to be alone. So she is with him. So, you know, obviously it's better for Krish even to be shot of Joan as well, but you know, she's not happy. As you said, she's like just kind of sleepwalking through her life, and of course Mac is no answer, but it does provide a spark of something else, you know.
Yeah. And you know, she comments to her therapist about how, you know, he does everything for her, prepares food, but it's bland, and I pretend it's really good. And so, all right, fine. Then we see her at home with her fiance. You know, he's prepared a nice meal. They, you know, sit down in front of the television the way, you know, millions of couples, I'm sure, do. And all right, what are we going to watch? They turn on Netflix, aka Streamberry, and you see some of the, you know, the shows that, okay, well, those are legit Netflix shows, because, you know, I recognize that or whatever. And then, oh,
was one of them Bandersnatch? I thought I saw like the actor who's in it. I thought I saw his, it was just for a second. Of course, I didn't rewind it, but yeah.
Well, anyway,
there might have been some. I didn't rewind the catch, but I feel like there were some Black Mirror Easter eggs in some of the channels that they.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that there are a number, not like that other episode we saw, but but anyway, so Joan is awful, is too intriguing for Krish to pass by. You know, she hits play, and you know, obviously we see her day played out chronologically. And highly accurately. I mean, there were little things that were different.
Right. And there's definitely some artistic license taken.
Yeah, and you know, ironically, you know, you and I are talking about it on April Fool's Day, and of course, she's like, "Well, how'd you do this, Krish?" She thinks it's a prank, of course. And then, as it goes on, she has a panic attack. Now, does she? Have the panic attack because she's anticipating what's going to come, maybe not next, but she knows she received the text from Mac and actually met him at the hotel. So
when I was taking notes, I was like, oh, she's freaking out because she realizes, but no, she's not. She's just freaking out.
Okay.
As anyone would. I mean, I think probably the last thing I would think is, oh my God, all the shit I said to my therapist, or oh my God, I kissed my ex in a hotel, you know, like those would not necessarily be the first things I would be thinking about. I would just be thinking, as she said, what the fuck is this? How the fuck is this? Right.
They're making me look like a monster.
Right. Right. So I think she's definitely very upset just at the fact that this is happening, that she is watching her day played out in pretty accurate detail for everyone to watch.
Yeah. Now, what'd you think about Krish's reaction to almost immediately pack a bag and hit the road?
Yeah. I mean, this is a relationship that probably was already not great. I'm sure Krish must have felt that this was seemed like a kind of last straw type thing for him. But and she already said, I mean, because they had the scene with the therapist where she says how bland he is, how boring he is, how his food sucks. You know, I mean, that's tough to watch. And then he sees her kiss her ex-boyfriend, and it's just like that's a lot to take.
Yeah, it is, but you know. If you love her, stay there and fight for her. You know, sit there and confront her. What the hell's all this about? You know, like I said to you a few minutes ago, why does she even go to the hotel in the first place? Now, you could say, well, she's unhappy in her present life, and you know, Mac represents that exciting time, albeit volatile, from. You know, her description to the therapist that they fought a lot, but they loved a lot, apparently. And while, you know, maybe that can work for some people, probably not for most. So,
just before we move on, I just like say, I think the funniest part is she wants to turn the TV off, but she doesn't know how to because he's got the remote.
Right.
Yeah. And that is just, oh my God. There's like so many things that just, they nailed it. Like, and the terms and conditions certainly was one, but not being able to turn off a TV manually without the remote, that was, oh my God, I was crying when I saw that.
Oh my God, because I don't know about you, but I've gone down that rabbit hole on, well, one occasion. I mean, that's one of those things you only do once when you realize, wait a minute, I can't turn it off. And, you know, I think finally it was like I just grabbed a remote from one of the other TVs and, you know, was able to turn it off. But but then once she gets to work and she realizes that everybody saw Joan as awful, which, you know, once we learn what the, you know, I guess what the master plan of Streamberry is, which is to, you know, have shows tailored for the individual. I guess it was almost like this was kind of a trial run for Streamberry to see how this kind of show would play out. But of course, she goes to work, gets fired for breaking her NDA during her firing of Sandy, which she's like, oh, wait a minute, what? I didn't break. Yeah, you did. And it's like, well, no, that wasn't me. That was Salma Hayek. Well, it wasn't really Salma Hayek. It was a digitized version.
Well, she's like, that was Salma Hayek. You know, like I didn't break my NDA. You know, but oh my God, there was
right.
Just so much.
When she goes and meets with her lawyer, and I think for most people, not that we're going to have a panic attack over all the things that we've agreed to with, you know, Netflix and HBO Max and our bank and, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it does give you pause to think about all of the things that you've signed without reading.
Yeah.
And
it's everything. It's literally everything. I was joking before, but not really. Like whenever one of my kids is in a tournament and we have to like fill out the quote unquote waiver. And then there's always stuff that's like pages and pages of stuff that you just click. Yes. Fine. You know, just accept. Right. Because who's got, this is actually a kind of funny story. Well, we bought our first house and my wife and I go to sign all the pile of paper you have to sign. So the realtor is there, I guess the title guy, whoever the, and you know, they explain what each piece of paper is. They hand it to us and I start looking at it and I start reading it. I read the whole thing and I sign it, give it to him, he puts it down, he gives me the next one. I start reading, he finds like, listen, if you're gonna read every single one, we're gonna be here all day. He's like, I will tell you what it says. You sign it.
Right. You either trust me or you don't.
Yeah, exactly. So there is that element of that, you know, where, you know, we, like I said before, like we understand that probably we are definitely giving away part of our privacy and there's definitely information about us that's going to get used if I click accept. But you know, I just kind of trust that it's not going to be anything really terrible and I'm not going to see myself, my life as a TV show, which I'm, it would be such a bad show that,
you never know. But, you know, but the one scene that's really preventing me from showing this episode to my wife is what happens. I mean, Joan goes to Mac and initiates sex, but he's like, can't perform because, well, it's going to end up in the show. And it's like, you know,
fair enough, man. I would be in the same situation.
Well, yeah, but you can't perform for Salma Hayek. And he's like, well, yeah, with that, you know, but I can't perform for you. I mean, that, you know, it's like, does he not realize how denigrating that is? I guess he doesn't, but then she gets the idea of how to get Salma Hayek's attention because she figures she's Salma fucking Hayek and she can, you know, clear this up. So, you know, the church scene where she defecates in the aisle, I don't know what the alternative could have been.
Nothing. It's perfect. It is maybe the single funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I guess
she painted a penis on her head, dressed up like a cheerleader, loaded up on, looked like Burger King, took laxatives, and just took a diarrhea dump in the middle of a wedding ceremony. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about that scene, but I forgot about that scene. And when I saw it, I was, oh my God, I was reminded, I was dying.
And then she gets home and watches the show, and she's of course pleased that they kept it in the show. And then we see Selma Hayek confronting her lawyer, who tells her basically the same thing. They can do whatever they want with your image. And then she says, what can you do to erase this image from every machine in the world? And it's one of those things that again, it goes back to what expectation of privacy do we have? And as you point out, well, none. None reasonably. Once it's out there, there's no undo button for the internet like that.
Absolutely.
And so now Salma Hayek's got to face, the same thing. And then we learn about how each, there's...
Can I just present a couple of Salma Hayek's greatest hits from a conversation with a lawyer? If you have kids who are listening to this, you might want to skip over the next 30 seconds or so. So we'll start off with paragraph 8 can suck my dick. You know I don't read this crap. Does my asshole have any rights? And last but not least, which I think is probably the best line in the show, the episode, shove it up your ass, and I hope you get paper cuts and your hemorrhoids and die.
I mean, she got the best lines in the episode.
Just that scene right there was like a shining bar of gold in the middle of this. Oh my God, it was just so funny. And Salma Hayek just nailed it with all those lines. It was so great.
Well, and then her reaction when she learns that Kate Blanchett plays her in her version of the show. So, so now.
Well, how do you think Kate Blanchett feels about this?
Yeah, right.
Fuck her.
Right. So anyway, so she goes to Jones to confront her, and Jones' first reaction, please don't kill me, Salma Hayek. All right, so maybe she just watched Desperado. You've seen Desperado. Right. Great movie, man.
That's a great movie.
But she's like, I'm Catholic. Fine, you've had a rough time, rough enough to take a dump in the house of God.
I forgot about that one.
That was a great one. And then, they decide to work together. And it's funny because it's for a moment, it's almost like Selma Hayek doesn't understand who she is, the power she wields, but maybe not, because there's some effing document somewhere that she signed away her power and that recognition. But of course, Joan reminds her, you're right, I am Selma fucking Hayek. And of course they decide to go in and bring down the computer system. And that scene with the Streamberry head executive, Mona Javadi, is awesome as well. She's being interviewed. And she's, Selma Hayek's here to throw her out. I forget exactly what she says, but
you mean with the reporter, like, we even have a version of this for you and everything,
right?
And that's what does get scary, because you're like, I mean, even though it is fictional and there is no quantum magic computer that can do this, but just the idea of how much of our lives we document, as we said before, and how this show is not that far of a step away from the world as it already exists.
Yeah, I mean, look, as you point out at the beginning of the discussion, in terms of the CGI capabilities that we already have, and while maybe they're not here yet, it's not far behind. And as the exec points out to the reporter, that this QAM computer, it's an infinite content creator capable of willing entire multiverses into existence. And as she points out, shows that it took months to produce in the past, we can do in mere days now. And we've talked how many times about the length of time in between seasons for shows where, you know, we were growing up, it was like, okay, fine, no new episodes in the summer, but come mid to late September, the show comes back, a new season. Well, you know, that's all over. You get, you know,
right,
shows that typically will take a year or more in some cases to come back. But the reporter asks her, well, you know, Joan is awful. I mean, Fatima is awful. You know, what about the opposite? Why are you going negative?
Yeah, right.
And unsurprisingly, she points out that, you know, people are more drawn to the negative.
It didn't really work, right?
Like, yeah. You know, Wayne is awesome. Nobody wants to see that.
No one wants to see that. So. Our subjects just didn't buy it, right, was what she says. And, like, I mean, I don't watch any. I've never seen – I don't know if I've ever seen a episode of Survivor, let alone a full episode, let alone a full season. But from what I gather, it's not people, like, cooperating and being super great to one another, right? Like, it's a matter of, you know, you do what you got to do and you, you know, whatever to survive and to move on. So, you know, like, people working together and cooperating, that's not a good show. People screwing each other over, now that's a show we want to watch. Yeah.
Right. And that's what we have here. And then once Michael Cera explains what it is that's going on, and of course Selma Hayek knocks him out because she's tired of listening, but Joan hesitates, and we've run into this sort of a situation in a number of science fiction shows where she hesitates smashing the computer when she learns that she will cease to exist, you know, in this,
well, in all the other,
right?
As you know, Alan from Minnesota had mentioned back when we were talking about Hang the DJ that this quantum magic computer houses, as I think Michael Cera says, you know, millions of digital consciousnesses that all think they're real, just like the Annie Murphy Joan until the very end thought that she was the actual Joan, right?
Right, right. And he says, the reality we're in will cease to exist. So whatever it is that gives her the strength to smash the computer with the axe, which I thought was a great touch that, you know, there was an axe handy.
Right.
And that everybody returns to their source selves. And then what Dark Mirror has done, at least on, I don't know if they always do this, they've certainly done it on a number of episodes we've been covering, the credits come up, but they're not done. So they right. might put up the directed by, and then there's...
They have, like, a coda to the story that they
exactly. first,
which apparently Fred got burned by last week.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? What I got burned the first time, because I think you even said this, and rightly so, I guess, you know you're done when the little thing at the lower right-hand corner starts streaming, you know, kind of right. filling into the next episode.
The next episode.
Well, when I was rewatching, I thought, I'm going to hit click watch credits. There was one more scene that I didn't see the first time, and it's Annie in her cheerleading costume in the church again. Then
no way.
Not necessarily any different, but I didn't see it the first time because I, you know, fell for the Netflix thing. Yeah. But we see Joan, Source Joan, and Annie Murphy, and, you know, Joan's got the coffee shop, Joan's Coffee or whatever it's called. And I love, they're both wearing ankle bracelets.
Yeah.
You know, and right. and it's like, what are they, I don't know, friendship bracelets or something that kids get? I guess it's probably more a female thing than a male thing. Well, no,
they're under house arrest.
But... No, I know that, but I think the intimation.
Like, yes, right. Yeah, like friendship bracelets, yeah.
Yeah.
Friendship anklet. Home arrest bracelets.
Exactly. And actually the character in the show we're watching had an ankle bracelet, and he had to take it off to go and save somebody. So what he did was he put it on his hamster, and that way the police monitoring just thought he was, you know, running around his apartment. But but anyway, so, you know, Joan and Annie are friends, and I guess we're back to just the one universe. But
right, and I like at the end, like she says, because we're watching Annie Murphy's version, and we realize from Michael Cera that Annie Murphy is not the source Joan. And so she realizes, she says, it's not my decision, it's Joan's, right? That what she does, and actually just that one line.
Has already been done.
Right. Or yeah, exactly, has already been done. It's not me who's going to do it. The source Joan is either going to destroy this computer or not. And she realizes that, you know, her, she doesn't have any agency, that she is not have any kind of free will.
Right.
That, you know, her whole life, as far as she knows it, she's just been, you know, doing what Joan's done.
So if I smash it, it's because Joan smashed it.
Yeah.
So I like it. All right. What else?
Talk to, you know, well, she says, you know, she's got this, the one thing is that where she says how she does not feel like she's the main character in her own life. She says, I just feel like I'm going through the motions every day. There is an actual, like, a Truman, I think it's called the Truman Show Complex, when you feel like you're being filmed and that, you know, you are the subject of a film basically about yourself, or a TV show, and that everyone around you is just actors and everything in your life is set up. I would like to say I've never felt like that, but I can't, you know? Like, there's definitely times when I think, you know, but as I said before, the only saving grace, I think, is to keep me from totally believing that I am not the subject of a TV show. It's just, this would be a TV show that would have no fans. It would be the worst TV show in the history, and it'd be canceled after probably by the time I was 13 years old. So, you know, but there's just things like, you know, like even the Truman Show, when he like pulls out and like there's cars in front of him, he just does a loop and then there's no traffic and things like that. When things like that happen like that, you're just like, damn, is this a TV show? Am I just, you know, like, which is, you know, obviously crazy, but like I said, I could always like, you know, fall back on how completely boring and unwatchable that TV show would be to assure myself that that is not happening.
All right. Well, you want to get the listener feedback?
Let's do it.
All right. We will be right back.
This is Alan from Minnesota, mostly with feedback about the Black Mirror episode, Joan is Awful. I forgot to mention last week that, like the other Alan, I saw Dune 2 and really liked it. Unlike so many people I hear from, though, who are perhaps exhibiting recency bias, I didn't think the sequel was better than the first. I graded the first film A+, one of only three such grades I've given out to movies released in the past decade, whereas I graded Dune 2 A-. I also finished season 5 of Fargo and felt it was really good overall. And I watched the 2005 Robert Downey Jr. film directed by Shane Black called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I enjoyed some of the fourth wall breaking, but ultimately found it to be a try-hard mess and graded it D+. I know it's a cult favorite for many people, but I often don't like those kinds of movies. Moving on to Joan is Awful. As Charlie Brooker pointed out, this is the only episode of the most recent season that is in the classic Black Mirror mode. It might get a little more absurdist than some, as there are other episodes set in the near future where the tech is plausible and people's reactions to it seem realistic, and neither is true for Joan is Awful. But then again, the first Black Mirror episode I ever saw, and still one of my very favorites, was from the first season, 15 Million Merits, and that one is in no way realistic. Note that the song from 15 Million Merits was used in this episode as well. Joan is Awful is extremely meta, and I love that. Brilliant use of recursion to have the fictional Joan also watch yet another version of her story nested within the story within the story. I'm a huge fan of Charlie Kaufman's film adaptation, so this kind of thing is totally my jam. I didn't know how she could possibly extricate herself from this situation, and definitely didn't have pooping in the middle of the wedding on my bingo card. Very clever of her, though. What a beautiful Black Mirror twist to learn that what we've been assuming is the top-level Joan is really just a simulation. Brings in simulation theory and dovetails nicely with other episodes, like White Christmas or Hang the DJ. They did a brilliant job of casting people for different levels of reality who don't look exactly alike, but have a similar enough vibe so it immediately works. It was interesting to read that Hayek and Murphy were so confused about the plot they kept asking Brooker questions to the point that he finally told them to stop. But Michael Cera had it all figured out. Kudos to Netflix for being such good sports about being ripped a new one in the depiction of Streamberry. Brooker recounted to Vanity Fair, quote, "I'd love to be able to say that there was a big fight. Actually, what happened was Netflix went, yeah, that sounds funny," unquote.
Hello, Dave and Wayne, and all listeners to Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. This is Fred from the Netherlands with audio feedback 321 about the Black Mirror episode Joan is Awful, Season 6, Episode 1. Coming back to last week's podcast, or actually to last week's episode, I got a little confused because when I now started my Netflix to watch Joan is Awful, I noticed that there were some post-credit scenes in the previous episode we watched, which was San Junipero. And we all talked last week about that Kelly made a choice to just die and not going into the virtual reality and just be with her husband and daughter. Now I see the post-credit scenes, and I see that Yorkie picks up Kelly at the beach house, and they go dancing. And I thought, huh? What? Did she eventually then decide to go after her death into the virtual reality after all? I got a little confused. Actually, I found it a very intriguing thing that Kelly chose not to do that, and just follow her husband and her daughter. And that was also the incentive I got from your discussion. So please help and get me out of this confusion. Okay, getting into Joan is Awful. A great episode. I think I would give it an B+ or perhaps an A. The doubt is a little bit in the ending because I found the ending a little confusing again. This episode is, in comparison to White Bear, more about confusion than about anxiety, although Joan does get a panic attack when she is watching the Streamberry episode with her fiancé. I don't know, but that's of course a narrative device, why that silly guy that tries to help her with the panic attack doesn't switch off the TV set. I mean, that is nicely helpful. A nice eye for detail was, by the way, when Joan gets angry, she throws her cell phone through the room, and next morning you see a big crack in her phone. I think, by the way, Netflix is quite brave here, because the Streamberry is, of course, so much Netflix, of course. And actually, they criticize themselves with all this legal stuff. You really wonder how that's in real life with Netflix themselves. Perhaps this is a hidden warning. If you're going to take a subscription to Netflix, please read your agreement carefully. Where it gets a little confusing is in the end about the different levels of Joan. It gave me the impression that actually the Joan we see is the Joan that's available to the source Joan. But on the other hand, everybody can see those episodes, but that is perhaps because it's a trial. So having 800 million people being available, is this personalized for television? Is this just for you, actually? And now they just try it on the general public? What was nicely done is that the boss of Streamberry also says to the journalist Fatima, "And your series will be broadcast this next Friday." And the journalist only gets disturbed very shortly and then asks the next question, why negative, etc. She just goes on with her job without being completely freaked out by that idea. So the thing that is confusing to me is in the end, when Joan hits the quantum computer, then she changes into Source Joan, and Annie is going to appear, but all the people around are still the same. So what about that this is a virtual reality as a whole? Okay, next week, the last episode, Bandersnatch. How are you going to do that? Because it's an interactive movie and everybody will probably make different choices. So what are we going to do with that? Okay, that will be all. Greetings. All the best. Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello to Dave, Wayne and everyone at Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. Alan from England here entirely with feedback about Black Mirror, Joan is awful. What an awfully good episode, as we would have said here in the 1950s. This week we are back to the use or abuse of technology slightly into the future. We have social trends, streaming services, curated content, the use of AI in content creation, really in the news this last year, and artificial consciousness. Well, that never gets old. And Selma effing Hayek. What an absolute trooper she was in this episode. So it's a show made by Netflix about a streaming service called Streamberry, which looks quite familiar. I wonder how much convincing those executives needed before agreeing to this one. Probably similar to the discussions in Mattel about the making of the Barbie movie. It starts off really normally in what we need to call level one, which we take to be the show's reality. And we are waiting for that Black Mirror twist moment, which is when Joan is eventually persuaded to watch Joan is Awful. The first watch, we are not at all sure what's going on or how it's being achieved in what seems closer and closer to real time. Where's the cameras or capturing or anything else? The social media link about everyone Joan knows also watching it along at the same time is more predictable, but still very well done, as is the reaction from her acquaintances to the portrayal of her and themselves. The bit where she goes to the lawyer and finds out she's agreed to virtually anything and everything when signing up to those terms and conditions that no one ever reads is a great touch. Of course, it moves up a gear when we get Selma Hayek also outraged about the use of her digital likeness, and similarly contractually stuck. The way Selma just waltzes into the Streamberry building, because she is indeed Selma effing Hayek, in that outrageous outfit is really great. And who doesn't love a bilingual joke in her reference to that quamputer? And then it gets weird. And it was definitely worth a rewatch or two to get my head around this bit. So everything up until now we have taken to be reality, but they're calling level one. And then Joan is Awful in the show is played by Selma at level two. And is then played in level three by Kate Blanchett, and that's about as far as we get to see. But this isn't reality at all, that's level zero. It actually reminds me of the thoughts that many people have that we are all, in fact, inside a computer simulation at some level. But, of course, they haven't got the agency that they do in San Junipero. Well, eventually, Joan physically destroys that quamputer, and level zero is revealed, which I finally understood better, indeed, on the rewatch. It actually reminded me of the ending of season two of the OA, where there are characters and then actors' names used, which is similarly confusing and quite a similar thing going on here. Actually, it was a bit like if you had watched that Inception movie, but from just after they'd gone into the first level of dream, and then watched all the rest of the movie, and then come out and thought, wait a minute, that's not where we started. For me, this is one of the best episodes of Black Mirror. Not too dark, but really perplexing, lots of thought-provoking ideas, and really great performances, especially from Selma. Take care, Alan from England.
Now, Alan in Minnesota brings up Fargo, which is a show, I mean, I love the movie, I've never seen the show, so...
Yeah, same, but the show's supposed to be great.
Yeah, I know. So I'll have to check out where that is. It's got to be somewhere. And then, you know, he points out about Charlie Brooker not explaining what's actually going on, which, you know, I mentioned that, you know, I love that about Charlie Brooker. So yeah, big fan.
Well, I also like the story about how he, you know, the Netflix didn't fight him on this. He just said, here's the idea. And they're like, yep, that sounds good. You know, but of course this is season six. So Charlie Brooker has, you know, a lot of like, you know, credibility and a lot of clout at Netflix. So, you know, there's probably not a lot that he says that they're like, you know, Charlie, I don't think that's a good idea. You know, like they probably just let him go, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they made fun of Streamberry canceling shows after two seasons, leaving a major cliffhanger. So,
right.
You know, now Fred, you bring up the post-credit scenes, which Fred brings up in his feedback, and Fred gives it a B plus, maybe even an A. We'll talk grades in a second.
Well, just to talk you through Sans Junipero, Fred, that Kelly did obviously, well, apparently we say, well, not apparently, obviously, changed her mind, and when she died, she ended up going to San Junipero. So she, the love of Yorkie, which,
yeah,
you know, like ended up kind of being the most important thing to her.
Yeah. Oh, Fred points out the Fatima is awful scene, which the look on the reporter's face was priceless. Now, Alan in England brings up Inception, which is a film we covered many years ago, and I think we even mentioned a few months back that, oh, maybe we should revisit that, because I sure as hell didn't completely understand what that movie was about, and I guess we did our best at the time, but yeah, definitely on my rewatch list, whether we cover it on the podcast or not.
That's always a movie that whenever I want to watch a movie, I'm like, should I watch Inception again?
Yeah. I really want to make that commitment?
It's pretty long, but I love that movie. That is definitely one of the top five for me, I think. But yeah, that's always a movie I think about. Like, I need to rewatch Inception at some point.
Yeah. All right. So anything about any of the feedbacks that we didn't cover?
Well, you know, it's one thing that Alan from England said that, you know, he said how he compared the simulation of that they're here in Jonah's Awful to the simulation of San Junipero, where, you know, it seems like the residents of San Junipero have agency, right? But what I wrote in my notes, I was listening to that thinking, well, do they though, right? Like, there's still programs in a simulation. So how much agency they might think they have agency, just like we think we have agency.
Yeah, well,
but do we? And therefore, do the people in San Junipero?
Well, I mean, I guess I would say yes and no based on what we see. I think we talked when we covered the show. They seem to be in the 80s. Do they have enough agency that they can say, well, we want to go live in the medieval time period and I don't want to be with Yorkie anymore? You know, do they have that much agency?
But right, that's what I'm saying. They might decide that. They might say, I want to go live in the 1500s. Why would you do that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess in San Junipero, there's no Black Death, so go for it. But the thing is that, well, if you are part of a simulation, you're part of a program, is that actually you making that decision?
No, that's a good point.
Is that the simulation making the decision, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That obviously we could go on for another probably hour talking about that. But that's just, I thought, like, to wonder, like, even because we certainly ascribe agency to the characters in San Junipero, but it's like, well, but they're digital. They're part of a program. Like, do they actually have agency?
Oh, good point.
Especially
when we see that final scene of the computer banks.
Exactly.
And we realize that's what they are.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Good point. All right. You ready for grade time?
I am.
I don't know if I want to go full A. I'm thinking A minus, but I'm not sure why the minus.
Well, I don't know either. I'm giving it full A.
Okay. I think I'm going to go A. There's nothing I mean, other than the scene in the church. And
as I said before, I should give it an A plus for that scene. That scene is so unbelievably hilarious. But you're not, obviously, Dave, you're probably a classier individual than I am. You're not one for scatological humor. But I mean, that scene, oh my God. just thinking about it, I am just cracking myself up again, just thinking about it. Like, everything about it. I think what really did is the penis she drew on her forehead.
Yeah.
I think that's really what puts it. If she just went in there and took a dump, that would be one thing. But the cheerleading outfit, the penis, the hair, the air horn.
Yeah. And the disruption of a wedding.
It's comic gold.
Right. So, all right. Well, before we sign off here, we are going to conclude our dark. I keep saying Dark Mirror, and I've typed it on the.
You said that a couple times.
And I had to go back. There were a
You're
couple.
Thinking
of,
about St. Paul rather than
I don't know
Netflix here.
But Black Mirror, we are covering Bandersnatch next week, and as Fred points out, Bandersnatch is unique in that it's basically DYOT, in other words, do your own thing. And your choices are probably not going to be Wayne's choices. My choices are probably not going to be Wayne's choices. I believe Alan said he went through and made all
the
different choices.
He made a flow chart.
Yeah. Made a flow chart. Gotta love it.
I am not doing that, but Alan, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing your flow chart, buddy.
Yeah. And it's funny because I can't tell you the number of times I've said to my wife, semi-seriously, you know, we need a whiteboard in here to keep things straight on what we're watching, you know?
Yeah.
And
you have like a murder board in your for your television shows.
And it was like
it'll really throw the police off, like, if you know, should you suddenly, you know, pass away or something like
you
that.
You know, I don't even know what
the police
happened.
Will come in and see this whiteboard full of all these lines and everything. Like, what the hell was going on in this house?
Well, you know, when I, you know, opened River Hill and left Athelton and, you know, realized that, you know, well, I can maybe sneak a few things out that maybe they don't have at River Hill. But dude, I had this whiteboard that was on wheels. It was like, you know, maybe 5 feet long by probably 3 or 4 feet. Uh-huh. And you could flip it over. Oh man, that's what nice. We need in our family room. All right. Anyway, well, let's stop with the nonsense. That'll do it for this episode of Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. Thank you for joining us. Love to hear what you think about Black Mirror. Anything going on in your genre world, check out the Facebook group and post there. Sci-Fi TV Rewatch @gmail.com is the way you can reach us. And we'll be back next week to talk about the Black Mirror episode Bandersnatch. But until then,
you know, Dave, just after watching this, I was kind of reflecting. I don't know why. I just started thinking about like the early days of Sci-Fi TV Rewatch, back when we call it Fatalist. You know, and we were younger men back then and everything, but you know, back then it was just constant sex and craziness.